Hello, and welcome to episode 113 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I am Stephen C. Graves, joined on this episode by Foz Mahmood. Hey, Foz.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I am peachy. It's late on a Tuesday night after a long weekend. Who can
complain? Yeah, happy 4th to everyone, since we're coming out like 5 days afterwards, 4 days afterwards. So.
Happy 8th to everybody?
Happy 8th, yeah. 7th. We're coming out on the 7th. Yeah.
I can't count.
Yeah. So Seth is gallivanting around Iceland, and that's why he's not on this episode. And
it's a hard life that boy has.
Yeah, have you seen some of his photos? It looks like it's just, you know, he's just really roughing it and just, you know, having a terrible time.
Seems like a giant barbecue.
Yeah, dealing with traffic, you know, it's nuts. everyone, if you don't follow Seth on Instagram, you should check out his photos because he's got some pretty cool shots he's taken from on the road in Iceland. So,
I think Captain Steubing is out on his boat.
Yeah, exactly. Our wonderful producer is having a good time on his yacht. That's where all the money is. It's in producing. Don't become a host. Become a producer.
Exactly.
Today's dot. I think I just wanted to talk about this because I thought it was interesting. There's an episode on it's an Air and Space Mag, and they have a video, and not a lot of information in it, but the video is interesting. It's about walking in airports, and there's a gentleman in the video who basically does the mathematics and science of walking in an airport and just watching people and gathering data and figuring out how people move about the airport to make the design better. And it's done in Frankfurt, which is confusing because Frankfurt's not the most friendly airport to walk around. But there's some cool info in there, like, you know, he knows people who travel in groups usually walk four across and cause basically a traffic jam, and it's interesting. So, hey, did you watch the video at all? Did you have a chance?
I have not yet.
It's kind of cool. I'm sure most airports employ someone like this or a consultant that does something like this to design their moving areas to be more efficient and friendly for customers.
Probably not Atlanta, though.
Probably not. You're probably right about that. You know what irritates me about Atlanta is that the escalators, like, they crisscross each other. So, like, you have to cross oncoming traffic to get on the escalator, no matter what. Like, they could have easily designed the escalators to go in directions that didn't need people to cross over. And maybe
it's unclear that there, when it was designed, that there are that many escalators in the original plan.
Oh, that's true.
Right? Think about that. Think about when that airport was built and think about how much the capacity's gone up.
True.
So, I mean, they keep just wedging more and more in. And, you know, even now that they've built the F concourse, you have to wonder at what point does a train stop having enough capacity?
I mean, it was packed. Last time I went through there was maybe 7 months ago, 8 months ago. And it was – the train was packed, and it was like a morning flight. And it was nuts.
Yeah, I just walked the whole thing. I mean, that's the one thing I will give Atlanta credit for is even though they have the train, they at least put a walkway so you can walk from end to end.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely appreciate that for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other airports where I've been where the walking experience wasn't that great. I feel like you and I were in an airport and we walked for what felt like forever. Was that Portugal? Porto. Remember, we got off the plane and we walked for what, and even in Lisbon, like we parked the plane at the very end of the terminal, and it had to be a half mile we walked to get to immigration.
I'm trying to remember.
It was like long glass walkways, and there's nothing there. I didn't even see any other gates. That was what was crazy about it.
Yes, because we were upstairs. We were above the gates.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had to go through that weird vestibule for security and passport control.
Yeah, yeah. Just odd. It was just an odd layout. Yeah, I mean, I think Newark's pretty bad, the C concourse. I mean, the last time I was there was when I was going to Lisbon. Just the way that the security checkpoints are laid out means that you're usually crossing over people when you walk through.
Well, so walkways are going away. What do you care?
No, that's true. That's true. For OTG, baby.
Exactly. And Houston's getting the same treatment, and I'm sure Chicago as well.
Well, it's not like you can screw Houston up anymore. That C terminal in Houston is just – it's so skinny. I don't think anyone can really effectively walk there.
But I'm going to miss Papado.
Is Papado going away? They said a few of them aren't.
Papado is
going. Oh, that's going to be – what are they going to put up there instead?
I don't know.
Hopefully something, because that end of the concourse is pretty barren.
Yeah, I mean, because they just had the food court at the beginning.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they'll make it a Polaris lounge.
No. Oh, God. You and your sarcasm. yeah, so anyway, we'll post the link. It's a cool little video. It's like 5 minutes. And I find that kind of stuff interesting because there's like so much that happens at airports behind the scenes that I think it's cool. So anyway, for lines, we have three separate lines. JFK Belgrade started just recently on Air Serbia, which I guess is being funded or partially owned by Etihad. And so I think they're releasing the planes from Etihad. And so it's got lie-flat business class on an A330-300. And it's the product that's it faces the aisles. The lie-flat product faces the aisles. I can't remember what the name. If Seth was on, he would know it.
That's the herringbone, not the reverse herringbone.
Yeah, it's the herringbone, yes. And it looks – I mean, they look like a decent – looks like a decent flight. I mean, coach is typical Airbus 330-242. But yeah, I mean, it's the first time I think that Serbia has been connected to the United States in quite a while. I'm trying to remember the last time Air Serbia flew or when their last service was. I'll look that up since our producer isn't here.
I didn't know there was much of a market for New York to Serbia.
Well, I mean, they, what's interesting about them is they actually have a lot of connections into like Eastern Europe. And the flight kind of times really well with that. So anywhere in Eastern Europe in the whole Balkans area, they've kind of got the market for. Which is and they fly it on ATRs and stuff. They fly a lot of the routes on ATRs, which is kind of cool. But yeah,
bold.
Yeah, it'd be fun to try it. Just an interesting route.
You know, this collecting lines is getting to be an addiction of some sorts.
So what you're saying is you're going to have to take the flight.
I don't know. I forget who I was talking to. It might have been you, where I'm like, this is getting to be as dangerous. The lines of coke might be safer than this.
Yeah, the other line is San Francisco-Auckland on United, and they started that on July 1st, and they're flying that on a 787-8. So it's the smaller.
Which is a return of an old route.
Yeah, I mean, how old is that? I mean, how long ago was that when they did that?
Trying to remember, it was a 777.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so it had to be after 95.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but it might have been L.A. and not San Francisco at that point.
So was that just a nonstop? I mean, they could do that.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I don't know. I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, it's the last. So Air Serbia, it's the first time that New York Belgrade or New York to Serbia has existed since JAT Airways in 1992.
So 2003 is when they dropped it.
2003? Wow.
13 years ago.
I wonder what the – was it 9/11 that kind of caused them to drop it, just with the economy going kind of crappy or
– Probably.
Yeah. And that was it out of San Francisco or was it Auckland – or L.A., sorry?
I'm looking. I want to say it was out of L.A., not San Francisco at the time, but I could be wrong.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, it's cool. It's cool that United's going to have another option to Trans-Tasman routes. Would you do this one? I think I would do this one. I think it'll be one of those routes where it's hard to find reward seats.
I would do it. Reward seats are sometimes not that hard on Air New Zealand, so I don't know what the United situation would be.
Well, I'm talking about in a premium cabin. You're saying in a coach cabin, yeah, you can pretty readily find them.
Sometimes you can even find premium cabin.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I would like to do that. Yeah. And then, speaking of L.A., Auckland, American started that route, also on a 787.
Yep.
About, 11 days ago? 12 days ago?
11 days ago, I think it said.
Kind of just like right at the end of June.
Yeah.
So that's another interesting one. And this is interesting competition for Air New Zealand. I mean, you've got kind of everyone kind of jumping into the Auckland game.
The thing that surprises me is all these routes are starting in the southern winter.
Yeah, like when no one really wants to go?
Yeah.
I mean, how bad is winter down there? What are we talking about?
I mean, it's not like a New York winter, but you still most of the traffic still is during the winter heat, the northern winter.
Yeah.
I don't really hear about many New Zealanders needing to escape.
Yeah, everyone goes down there during their summer for the tourist reasons. But I think what it is that it's our summer right now. And so people are off and wanting to travel, and maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
It could be. I am not an airline CEO, so I cannot tell you.
Hey, we can armchair it here. That's what this podcast is for.
I mean, do you get the slots at a discount if you start in the winter?
And it comes with a rain jacket.
The one thing, I mean, like, I might have an answer to this already. I'm surprised Delta hasn't jumped in on this.
Do they have the planes to do it?
A 332 could do it.
Really?
Yep.
LA?
Wow.
Well, then they do have the planes.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
clearly, they're not building that Haneda hub that they keep threatening to.
I mean, maybe they just don't think that they could profit on it, but I don't know if that really makes a lot of sense.
Since when has that played into logic?
You're right. Absolutely right.
I mean, at this point, I'm pretty sure that it's a neck and neck race between AA and Delta at LAX to see if one starts service, the other will start service pretty quickly thereafter to see who can drown the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Delta seems like they're, I guess, a little hesitant on the Australia New Zealand routes. I mean, they only have Sydney, right? And they're kind of relying on Virgin Australia for other traffic. That's what it seems like to me.
Yes, and I don't know how successful Sydney is mm-hmm. on the grander scale.
I mean, because they have to fly that one with a 777, right? I don't think they can do that one with a 332.
No, they do that with an LR because they have the ERs with Rolls-Royce engines, which don't have the range.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I mean, that one's dependent on the plane, and I don't know.
Yeah,
so you also have like Hawaiian and Qantas and even Air New Zealand, who's not starting a ton of new routes, but they're starting some, kind of playing for that traffic, and Hawaiian selling those connections via Honolulu, which kind of breaks up the trip. I mean, it's kind of nice.
It is, but you end up losing a day.
That's true. Yeah, because by the time you land in Honolulu and then catch the connection, you've burned 8 hours or so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, does Air Canada fly Vancouver, Auckland?
They do, yes. Or, hang on, I don't think they fly Auckland. I think they fly to Brisbane now. I think they just started Brisbane.
I know they do Sydney.
Yeah.
No, it's just Air New Zealand that does Vancouver, yeah. Auckland.
So Air Canada is starting Brisbane service out of Vancouver, which is another kind of strange. I mean, that's a very Delta move by them. But I guess they have the traffic for it, so.
It's only a 7-8, though.
That's true, yeah, 787.
I mean, the 78, they are living up to their name of opening a bunch of new routes.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, Vancouver also has Delhi service coming, and they're flying Vancouver-Delhi on a 787 here soon, which is, I mean, that's right up there with, like, San Francisco-Delhi.
Do they go west or do they go east?
I don't know which direction they're going to go. It starts, I think it's coming in October, so that one will be an interesting one to watch. We just kind of went down the rabbit hole of 787s. They're actually going to use a 787-9 for that. So they're using a slightly bigger plane. But, there's not a lot of West Coast, Delhi, or India non-stops. So it's kind of a big deal.
I mean, the only flight that existed for years was the Jet Airways, but that just stopped somewhere in either Shanghai or Beijing.
Yep. Yep.
And Air Canada flies San Francisco now, right? Or not Air Canada, Air India?
Air India flies San Francisco, Delhi, I believe, yeah.
Yep. That's going to be a long flight.
Yeah, it's timed. Vancouver to Delhi will be 14 hours, right at 14 hours.
It's not that bad, actually.
Yeah.
That must go polar.
It has to. Yeah, I have to think they go straight over the pole. Because, I mean, that's 14 hours is about the same as Vancouver to Hong Kong. It's almost the exact same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you think about it. I mean, you're turning what was a one-stop necessary – it was a necessary one-stop destination for most people on the West Coast. And it's now turning into a non-stop destination. So it's cool. I mean, technology, man. It's awesome.
What next?
What next? I don't know what's next. The moon?
Newark, Singapore.
Hey, you know, with the A350 and stuff, it's definitely possible.
Hey, all I'm going to say, the A350, it's unclear if they've truly tested on a route that long yet.
Yeah, that is true. And we'll see, because, I mean, they're going to have to do some tests for the long-haul, ultra-long-range version that they're selling.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they're going to have to do some kind of long-distance test, weighted down and full fuel, and see how it performs.
Exactly.
You had mentioned before the show, the Centurion Lounge is open at IAH, and I actually think we should make this the destination, because we didn't have a destination at first.
Perfect.
And we were just going to talk about Jupiter.
Yes.
Because
we can't get there yet.
No, but Juno from NASA is on its way, and it's, you know, it should be there. And what's interesting is someone is actually pinging it from Earth. I was reading this. We'll talk about this really quickly, and then we'll talk about the Centurion Lounge. They were pinging it from Earth. It took an hour and a half for the ping and the response, which is kind of fascinating. So,
wow.
Kind of cool. So anyway, just a little tidbit. So if you want to look something up, Juno on NASA is going to be, I guess, orbiting Jupiter for a while. So very cool.
So completely random.
Mm-hmm.
I just found this really interesting. I didn't realize Delta was still accepting deliveries of 330s.
I didn't either.
They apparently have accepted 3 in 2015, 4 in 2015, and 4 in 2016.
I had no idea.
All 333s. here's a really interesting thing. They're actually registering them with Northwest tail numbers.
Really?
Yes.
Is it because they took the deliveries, were they ordered by Northwest?
They might be, but there was the last ones before 2015 were delivered in 2009.
Well, I guess it depends on, we'd have to look at the airframe history, because I know there's rules about IN numbers and how you can register them, like depending on, you know, when the frame was laid.
Mm-hmm.
So it may have something to do with that. But, I mean, if someone out there knows, I'd love to know why they're getting Northwest. So are they actually getting IN blah, 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 NW?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And 822 to end in 829. And it's funny, the manufacturer serial number jumps from 865 to 1627.
Hmm.
So the last one delivered in 2009 was 865, and the first one delivered in 2015 was 1627.
Well, if you're a listener and you know the reason why this is happening, leave us a comment or hit us up on Twitter. We'd love to hear the reason, because that is a little strange. It's actually really strange. So now the Centurion Lounge at Houston. Yeah. Have you flown to Houston since this has opened?
No, I couldn't tell you the last time I've been to Houston.
I couldn't either. Well, I could actually. May. I was in Houston in May. But no, it's actually open in Terminal D, and it is, my understanding is that it's accessible behind security if you take the elevator just behind security. As you go through the security checkpoint, if you take that up, it will take you to, there's like a medium, it's the old immigration level. At Terminal D, like where you actually used to go through immigration. It's on that level of the airport. So they call it the mezzanine or something now.
Have they redone the security in D?
No.
So it's still that disaster that's downstairs and then you come off the escalator?
Yeah, I think they made it a little bit bigger so they could fit more people in, because it was like a pen. I mean, you know, you went into like a holding pen and you basically stood around in a blank windowless room for however long it took to get through. But I think they made it bigger. Now the elevators are actually behind security. They used to be kind of not accessible, and then mm-hmm. I think they had to make them accessible, so they moved the security checkpoint a little bit. Because it's the only way to get up the terminal via an elevator. Like that's the only elevator that's behind security now for D. So
interesting.
But if you do that, so let's say you go up the escalators, because the escalators skip the mezzanine level, you actually take the elevator down from there. And it's right by the duty-free shop at the top of the escalators. So it looks nice. I mean, it's at the end of like a long hallway. Doesn't look like much of a view out of it, which I'm not sure. Do any of the Centurion lounges have tarmac views? Maybe LaGuardia?
LaGuardia does. Miami does. Vegas does.
I know DFW doesn't, right? And San Francisco doesn't.
Correct.
Yeah. And I don't think Seattle does too, because it's like the mini version.
I don't even know where the Seattle one is.
I don't either. I remember reading something that was like in a basement. So.
It's not the old United one, is it?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I don't know for sure. I'm not a Centurion guy. I don't have a platinum card, so.
Hey, you're not missing much.
Hey, apparently, whenever I read Twitter, I am. I'm missing a lot.
I mean, the lounges are nice. The Centurion lounges are very nice. There's no doubt about that. I question the value of American Express Platinum at this point.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Just for the lounge, it's not worth it?
No, I question American Express at this point. Their market share is shrinking, and you know they used to be an Uber Elite product, and now they've tried to grow wide and you know attack a number of different demographics, and it's not working for them, so they're scrambling.
Well, I mean, they've lost Costco, right?
That was a huge boon. It's pretty bad when 10% of your business disappears overnight.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you have Starwood and Marriott. The merger's coming together. Who knows what the credit card's going to be coming out of that?
Discover. Diners Club.
God. It's not even funny. I mean, that's painful. Like, my ears are bleeding now. I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine it'll be a Discover just because it's not widely enough accepted to make it useful. So I can't even think of the last time my parents used to have a Discover card, and I thought it was worthless then, and I was like 8 years old. So
I have one because years ago it was the only thing Costco accepted.
Oh, well. And you've kept it around?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so I mean, I think you're right. I think Amex is in a little bit of a predicament when it comes to future products and what they offer now and kind of what their growth strategy is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised the CEO hasn't gotten fired.
Just because of mismanagement?
I think because of the Costco thing. I mean, if there's an amazing article on Bloomberg of the attitude they had and the cockiness they had in renegotiating that deal and how they lost it, and basically, you know, they didn't think they would lose it. And my favorite quote out of the article is, you know, Ken Chenault is going to Jim, whatever his name is, the guy who is the CEO of Costco, is like, oh, you know, we're business partners. And the Costco guy goes, no, You're just a vendor, just like the guy I buy cheese from. All I care about is what my cost is, because that's what gets passed on to my customers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's their what was their deal with Costco, you think? Was it just better processing rates?
The American Express deal was that Costco got all the revenue from the credit card fees, but they paid per swipe transaction. So they paid a discounted merchant rate. With the Visa deal, they pay nothing for swipes.
And they get to keep the revenue.
And yeah. But they're
well, then how's Visa making money on that? Interest?
Well, because there's two things. The card portfolio is a very affluent audience.
Mm-hmm.
And since they got the card portfolio as part of it, they got access to all these affluent people. And so the expectation is that people will use their card at more than just Costco.
Gotcha. Okay. So the theory is there, we'll get the transaction fees from somewhere else.
Exactly. They just won't get them at Costco, but they'll get them everywhere else. I mean, 4% back on gas is pretty substantial.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we actually looked at like maybe getting a Costco membership, but then it's, you know, the cost of that and everything. And we live in a one-bedroom apartment. I don't think we have anywhere to store 86 rolls of toilet paper, but it would be nice. Not for that much toilet paper, but for other things.
I think it's only 36 per pack, not 84.
Oh, okay. Whatever it is.
You can keep them in your car and bring them up when you need them.
You don't keep anything in your car in Portland unless you want the windows broken.
People would still keep pee. It's that bad?
You would be surprised, my friend. You'd be surprised.
Okay, well, I take that back.
There was a video on the news last week about a guy that just like rolls up to a car, breaks the window, and steals a kid's backpack. And what did he get? Crayons?
You want a good break-in story?
Give me one.
I used to live in an urban environment in northern Jersey a couple of years ago, and it wasn't really a bad part of town, but it was definitely on the cusp. And I accidentally... One night, didn't even think about it, I had a popcorn maker I was going to take back and return on my back seat. Next, you know, don't even think about it. I go down the next morning, you know, I'm going to work. And as I'm putting the key into the car, I'm like, why is there glass in my back window? And I look to the other side, I'm like, oh, F. And so, you know, I call the cops and they come and the guy's like, and I'd left my $200 watch in the car and a couple other things. And the guy's like, are you missing anything? I'm like, I look at him, I go, you're not going to believe this. He goes, okay. I'm like, I'm missing an iron and a popcorn maker. They left the watch, they left the car radio and everything else, but I'm missing an iron and a popcorn maker. And the guy's like, really? I'm like, yeah.
It's like, I got really lucky. I got really, really lucky.
I'm just like, God, it was more hassle dealing with the broken window than anything else.
That's what I hate. Like, I don't want to deal with broken glass. I just think that's and replacing everything you need to replace in the car to get it fixed. Because glass isn't cheap, you know, like. Some, especially depending on the windshield that they break, if it's the rear windshield like heated or something, oh man, you're looking at $1,000.
Fortunately, this was a side window, so it was like $500-$600. But it was just still having to deal with it was a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I think we've completely side-railed ourselves.
Oh, completely. I think people are going to listen to this podcast and go, "What? Who are these guys? Is this an aviation podcast? This is like NPR's, you know, Around the Horn." No, we were going to talk about – so the Centurion Lounge, I would say check it out. Some of the pictures actually pretty good. It's got the typical amenities, has a shower room and stuff, which is nice. I mean, it's a nice alternative because in Terminal D there isn't a lounge that I know of that has showers besides maybe the BA Lounge, but I'm not even sure it does. I don't think the KLM Lounge does.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, I haven't been in Terminal D in a long time.
Well, and so what's interesting about the deal with Terminal D and – the Centurion Lounge is that Terminal D will be renovated in the near future. It'll become part of E and C. Like, it'll become one giant terminal over there. And because C will become partially international on the north side. So that'll all get sucked into one terminal. And Amex has actually made an arrangement with Houston Airport Authority to move the lounge when that happens. And they'll get space in the new terminal as well. So they'll move the lounge whenever the construction starts, probably to Terminal C. The renovations on D will start, and then they'll probably move the lounge back to D or wherever in that area.
As part of the renovations on C, are they adding a second level?
Part of it, yes. So the area, you know, right now between C and D, you have like that big hallway.
Yes.
It's like a long hallway. There's no gates or anything.
Those really weird gates that were up and down before.
Yes, exactly. That all kinds of goes away, and it gets turned into – Terminal C gets a level added on that one wing right there. And it gets extra gates, and I think it gets moved out a little bit. So it's going to have a lot more space. It's going to be more like Terminal E. The general look will look like Terminal E. And then that'll flow into D as well. So D gets kind of a big facelift and opened up a little bit, so you're not walking down tiny tunnels. And so it'll be nice when they get it done.
I mean, the one nice thing is United won't control it, so it won't be OTG'd.
Well, I think that's the thing, is that I don't know if United controls it, but they'll control part of C still, but they've relinquished control, a complete control of C. So they said, oh, we're not going to, like, we're hands off on this. So it could go OTG. I think there's not like there's any good eating in Terminal D anyway.
No, but if they're renovating, presumably they'd get some, add some interesting.
Yeah. I with the economy the way it is in Houston and the oil markets, I wonder if they kind of slow down the renovations because they've started on Terminal C South. That's, okay. And that's pretty, I mean, it's coming along. Like, we had a friend send us pictures. They've got walls up now and stuff. So that's going fast. So I wouldn't be surprised if that continues, but I don't know. Maybe they'll stall on the north side.
I don't know.
But anyway, outside my wheelhouse, Hyatt is devaluing and up adding value to some properties. Some people are excited because there are certain properties that are going down a tier.
Yes.
Or two tiers.
I think they said 50 hotels going up and 50 going down.
So it's about it's a break even, depending on what your like and dislike of properties are. Like which properties you like and which properties you don't like.
Exactly.
I haven't looked at the list. I think I saw that the Hyatt Regency South Beach in Miami is going down two categories. So I guess that's good for people who like South Beach.
I have not looked at the list yet. It is on my list to look at the list, but I just got the email this evening, and while I was out, I'm like, ugh.
You were like, oh, God, what now?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
We've gotten bought by Hilton.
Well, what's interesting is they gave less than 30 days notice.
Oh, it's happening fast.
August 1st.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they usually do it once a year, right? They do a reconfiguring of the hotel values, right?
Yeah.
So it just hasn't happened yet this year, and they decided they're going to tell people today that it's coming August 1st.
Yep.
Wow. Well, I guess that's one way to do it.
It's the nature of the beast, right?
Yeah. And then lastly, we can talk about – well, let's talk about two things. The union at United Airlines. It sounds like the flight attendants have come to a semi-sort of agreement on a unified contract.
They're
getting closer, so it needs to be ratified. So that's the next step. And once it gets ratified, it's pretty much a done deal, right?
Yes.
And I was reading some of it. I mean, after 13 years of service, it's almost like $100 an hour for senior flight attendants.
Yeah, it's pretty substantial.
It's a nice lucrative little contract they've arranged.
Yeah.
So good for them. Hopefully this will start to be the beginning of a new United if this gets ratified and things go forward. Hopefully service will improve a little bit, cabin service specifically, because there's a lot of disgruntled. I mean, you hear it. The Continental side likes to blame the United side. The United side likes to blame the Continental side. And you hear that sometimes on planes in passing comments.
Just blame Glenn Tilton for everything.
No, Smizik, my friend, Smizik. It's all his fault.
And before Smizik was Tilton, people have forgotten that.
That's true. It's true.
And who brought us Ted.
And then lastly, you had mentioned AA earnings on Alaska. And I briefly saw something the other day mentioned about this, but I wasn't sure what you meant. So what do you mean?
The earning rates for American Airlines flights on Alaska are changing drastically, I believe, starting August 1st.
Okay.
And right now you pretty much get miles for everything, but a lot of them you get very few miles moving forward. And Alaska attributes it to AA going revenue-based.
And so they're rewarding fewer miles for certain fare classes.
Yep.
On American. Is that what you're saying? I'm looking at the table right now. I'm going to try to pull it up real so we can talk a little bit about it, because this is interesting. I mean, it's an interesting change. Flights taken on or after the August 1st of this year, 2016, the lowest classes, so O and Q, which I think are kind of middle range class. I mean, they're not arranged in order here, but are they pretty mid-range or are they a little bit low?
K is high, definitely on the higher end. I know that.
Well, O and Q earn 25%. N and S earn 50%. G and V earn 75%. H, K, L, M, W, Y earn 100%. And then C and R, which are upgrade classes, earn based on their original booking class. D, I, R, which that's confusing to me because R is listed twice, earn 100% with 50% bonus, and J earns 100% with 100% bonus, and then first class, very similar, A and P with a 50% bonus, F with a 100% bonus. And this is a change, basically, it's kind of a kick in the butt because everything, all economy classes for the most part, earned 100% on Alaska previously. Business earned 100% with a 25% bonus, and first earned 100% with a 50% bonus. So people in paid F and paid C and higher classes are going to get, they're going to come out on top on this.
Which is what we're seeing across all the programs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a downer. I mean, because American, for me, is probably the better backup for flights out of Portland over Delta. I'd prefer to fly American, I think, although my recent experiences with American have not been great. So they were a bright spot. Like, American was a bright spot in Alaska's earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going away. So,
well, nature of the beast.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I think do you think then that the reason they're doing this, I mean, American's going revenue based, but is this the kind of, I mean, American has to pay them, right? Do they pay them for that?
Exactly.
And so they're saying, well, we're just not going to pay you as much?
Well, it's probably more of a, you know, it's like a clearinghouse bank, because AA buys miles from Alaska, Alaska buys miles from AA and vice versa, because as they pass people back and forth. But it must be that they just said, you know, with us changing, we're going to change the way we pay, what miles we pay for.
Yeah, yeah. And so the rate, they want to keep the rates about even, and so they're adjusting everything.
And it could also be Alaska saying, we don't want all these people jumping to our program on these cheap tickets if we keep awarding at the same rate.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of it too, right? I mean, you can still, like, the rates to redeem on American aren't changing, as far as I know.
Exactly.
And so Alaska's probably saying, well, we don't want to change that, so we'll change the earning and adjust that way. Interesting stuff, man. Interesting stuff.
Always is.
Always. Well, I think that's about it. You have anything else?
No, I do not.
We are sorry for the rambling. When you put Foz and I in a room, we can just go for hours. So.
Well, we had to fill in for Seth.
We did. I think I made up for him, right? I didn't curse enough. Should I throw in, like, an obligatory, like, shit or something?
Nah. Well, you just did, so
there
we're
we
done.
Go. Yeah. Anyway, you can follow us on Twitter at @dotslines. You can visit our website, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment there. Love to get an iTunes review from you or just a ranking from you. Thanks for listening and happy travels. Bye bye.
Take care.